For August the 30th, 2019, we talk about Final Fantasy XII Remastered, one police department's attempts to prevent swatting, and we ask you which game mechanics you hated at first, but learned to love. Welcome to Level 298. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jella.
And, yeah, I guess, was I the last person who wasn't here? I guess so.
I believe Hi. So, yes.
Hi. How's it going?
It's going okay.
It's good.
Yeah. I don't really have an awful lot that's been going on. I've just been doing a bunch of... travel prep. I was at a volleyball game earlier tonight. My niece was playing, you know. And afterwards, you know, she came up and I gave her a hug and I said, "Great job," thinking that she would know what that was, and she didn't.
No.
And so yeah, no. And she
oh,
just
no.
Yeah. So that's
you're weird. So uncultured.
Yeah.
So that's my story. I slipped into.
Did you tell her? Did you tell her that you used to be with it, but then they changed what it was,
and now what's it is strange and scary to me? Yeah. So that's all that I've got. That and my allergies have wrecked my body. I'm nothing but a picture this. I'm nothing but a big pulsating sinus.
Ew. Yeah. That's really that. Gross.
I know, right?
I don't want to picture that. Why did you do that to me?
I don't know.
Why'd you do that to the listeners?
Yeah.
I thought moving north of Cincinnati would help on that allergy front. Apparently not. Apparently it's just all of Ohio.
Yeah, it's all of Ohio. Also, I'm surrounded by a lot more farmland and grass and trees and stuff than I was in the city. Yeah. So this is my first summer back where I grew up, you know, and all that time that I spent down there in the city has changed my immune system. So,
it's made you weak.
It made me strong in a different way. Yeah. Well, what's up, Joel?
So, I wasn't on. I was supposed to be on, but I wasn't on. There's all kinds of stuff going on because a couple of weeks ago at this point, when I was at work across town, my dad let Rami, my cockatiel, out, and then he didn't watch him and went outside, and Rami flew out after him, and my dad didn't notice and didn't realize that Rami was gone until dinner. And I get a message after they have already looked around in the house for him, thinking he was inside somewhere, saying that my bird was missing. And I came home fighting a bunch of rush hour traffic. Mm-hmm. And then there was a storm that night, so I couldn't search by the time I got home for him. And I have covered about 80 to 100 miles on foot since then, looking, scouring literally everywhere, trying to use the whistle that I use to call him to me, because like I could summon him by whistling, and I could not find him. I've posted signs, posted it on everywhere imaginable. I've had all these people suggest, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Trust me, if you think of it, I've done it.
Oh yeah.
I've done literally everything. I have searched morning, noon, and night, daily. And at this point, it's been 2 weeks, and so I'm just basically in a state of mourning right now, because I don't know that it's very likely that I will get him back. I honestly believe somebody probably has him, because he's so sociable and lovey, that, you know, probably somebody has him and doesn't want the reward money, because I did post a reward for him, but that's what I think. So all I hope is that whoever has him loves him and cares for him properly, you know, at least half of what I did.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you know, he was my baby, so I don't know that that is possible.
Yeah.
So I have been pretty brokenhearted. but I am trying to, you know, get back into everything. And I started a couple of new games with the hope of trying to fill up the time that I used to spend with Rami.
Yeah.
And I've gotten back to my normal workout routine. Like, I put so many miles on my legs, like, because I did my Tough Light before that, and I didn't fully recover my legs before all of this happened. And then I did another 80 to 100 miles in like a week. And so, you know, like, it's been like a process of trying. Like, I started getting to the point where I was starting to have like chronic dehydration, because, you know, this is the worst part of summer in Houston.
Right.
So like the heat index today was like 112. So imagine me out there most of my free time, sweating my ass off looking for my bird. And like, I was dehydrated. I could not get enough water and electrolytes in to counteract what I was losing. And I was also starting to show signs of getting sick. So I had to cut back, and then slowly but surely at this point, you know, just stop,
yeah,
you know, because there's nothing, like, I have no idea what direction he went in or anything, and he can fly. I can't fly, you know,
right.
I can't find him nearly so easily. So, so that's in sad news, but I do have something else. I have to right a wrong and triumph over evil by correcting you, Cole, for something that you said on abject suffering. So that occasionally happens, but
wait,
you said on, I think it was the Dilbert episode, I think it was Exquisite Suffering, actually,
okay,
that something about creatine and protein powder giving you like crazy amounts of gas or something.
Okay.
And no, I am a trainer. I personally use both creatine and protein powder.
Okay.
And I don't have that issue. So I don't know how much protein powder you were even thinking someone's going to consume, because like a regular amount in a scoop is like 20 to 25 grams of protein, which is like equivalent to a serving of protein, like you eat a meat or a tofu or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's how much is in the protein shake. I don't know what you think a protein shake is made out of, other than maybe magic.
No, I don't have a lot of experience with that. I based that comment. I had a housemate for a while who was really into training as well. And he would always talk about that. So maybe he was mistaken and that passed over to me.
Well, okay. It's a thing where you will fart if you go to the gym and you're working out, because
you're
squeezing your muscle, you know, like that's a thing.
Yeah.
But it's not the protein powder, unless that person had an actual sensitivity to whey and was using whey powder, for example.
Gotcha.
Like if they're lactose intolerant and having that, they will probably have a gas problem. So
yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I did not mean to spread misinformation. That was literally just my I have heard about Soylent farts, but I do not think that relates to protein at all.
Yeah, I can't speak anything about a Soylent. I just know about you know, protein powder and creatine. And I'm like, I've been using that stuff for years. And no, that's definitely not a thing. Like,
so Joe, as a trainer, what would you do though if someone came in and was like, okay, my main goal here is to increase my fart output. Like, what would be your recommended supplement?
Well, here's the thing. Farting and stuff like that usually happens because your gut is either because of one or two things. You either have a sensitivity to something that you're eating that is causing indigestion and issues in the digestive process, or two, your gut is damaged from either taking too many antibiotics, not eating a healthy diet, and your gut flora is all jacked up. Literally, if you take antibiotics, like for, I think it's 3 or 4 days, it can jack up your gut flora for multiple years.
Yeah.
So like the longer you're on antibiotics for any reason, the worse it is for your gut flora. And it's a very, very long time before you get back to like a normal biome in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, honestly, somebody would have to eat some trash, and they would have to eat stuff they are sensitive to that, you know, really upsets their stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the best way to do that. Like, and also if you don't eat very much fiber and then you increase your fiber, like say, for example, people who go from being omnivorous to vegetarian or vegetarian to vegan, mm-hmm. there's like an increase in the amount of fiber they are eating as you add more actual fruits and vegetables into your diet. Yeah. So if you just up that level of fiber and your body's not used to it, you will also have a gas issue for a little while your stomach is trying to figure out what the fuck you just did.
Yeah.
Because you just drastically changed what the composition of the stuff that you're putting in there is.
So. Right. That also would apply if you are specifically looking at your carb intake and you are trying to go for fewer net carbs, which means getting more fiber, more dietary soluble fiber and offset whatever sugars or, you know, other carbohydrates are there. That will also increase your fiber intake.
Yep, and the thing is that does go away eventually, the only things that don't go away eventually are like if your gut flora is just screwed up, unless you do something to fix it, like eventually over time, unless you continually damage it, it will fix itself. So like keep fucking it up, and your sensitivities don't change. Like you know, very often they don't change. Sometimes they do. Generally, like you might be sensitive to something as a baby, and then when you're a young adult, that sensitivity goes away, like you grow out of it. But then very often when you get older, it comes back again. So, you know. I actually seriously answered your question, Dennis.
Yeah.
So I tried to goof and I learned something.
Yeah.
I can educate you about this subject. So there you go.
I consider me educated. Ben, you had thoughts on farts. I would be fascinated to hear.
Yes.
Just
eat Skyline. You'll fart more. It's easy.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, man. The microbiome is fascinating. It just, you know, what I go back to is, you know, a good deal of your body's serotonin is made in the gut. The brain gut connection through the vagal nerve is actually kind of ridiculous. So I don't know. It is an interesting thing. If you are looking for an interesting thing to read about the human microbiome.
Yep.
I feel like the stomach bacteria is like the new kale, where it's like a lot of people say it does a lot of different things, and I'm very skeptical of a lot of them.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, like there's definitely a lot of stuff that's backed it up for years and years. It's just that most people to try to tell somebody that what they eat needs to change is like telling them that they are of the wrong religion or wrong political swing. And like it's a very sensitive subject because food is so intrinsically tied to someone's culture and upbringing that it's a big deal to try to tell somebody to change that. So like that's part of the reason. Uh-huh.
It has a direct connection to your brain, I hear.
But I mean, like, yeah. I mean, at least the microbiome. Yeah.
Yes.
Those things.
Yes.
Go ahead, Joel.
Well, doctors are told not to tell anybody anything about nutrition because they are not licensed nutritionists and they don't want to open themselves up to that liability. So they are instructed by the institutions for which they work not to do that so they don't get into a lawsuit.
That is really dumb.
So that's a thing. So your doctor will never tell you the benefits of a different diet.
Yeah. Well, no. I appreciate the correction on the protein powder and the farts, Jella.
Yes, so that was my very, very important, like, I needed to come on the show and just clarify that for, like, the two listeners that listen to that show that also listen to The Level.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Dennis, since you're so curious about farts, what have you been up to?
Oh, I've actually got a not quite a fart story, but a story of that type to share with you.
Okay.
Don't worry. That does not. It's not as bad as that implies. I got a text from Jen this morning. She drove the kids into daycare, and I'm just going to read it to you guys and let you make what you will of it. She goes, "For a hot second, Milo thought he pooped on the way in. Subsequently, he informed me, 'Silly me, mommy, it's not poop. It was a granola bar.'" And then ate the piece he found.
Okay. Well.
She then says, "I have so many questions. I am too afraid to ask."
Okay. Where? No. You know what?
Don't even go there.
No, I'm shutting the door on the logistics of that. When you said, "Oh, I've got a story that's like that," I knew it would be in relation to your kids. because that is just it's you. B, generally that's the way kids roll, is mm-hmm. they're fascinated with that. No, I'm closing the door. That is disturbing on its face.
Yeah, so that's the highlight of my week right there. We laughed about that all day at work.
silly me, mommy.
Yeah. Oh. This is the 5-second question mark rule.
I've just accepted that they have food stashed in places I will never find. Like they have, they're like pulling food out of a pocket dimension. It's you set them in a completely sterilized car that a fixer just went over, and they will find the 3-month-old piece of toast and immediately stick it in their mouths.
Where are you getting this jelly? Yeah.
Don't understand. It's hermetically sealed.
Oh, ridiculous. It's a locked room murder mystery. Except with graham crackers and stuff.
Just with raisins with fuzz on them.
Oh, Jesus. A lot of things I'm shutting the door on today, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you opened it up by saying, hey, Dennis, you were so interested in that gross thing. Yeah, so, you opened the door for that one to come on.
It was a strained segue. I didn't know necessarily that I was waiting for that to appear.
You didn't know that you were inviting the devil to your door.
Exactly. I did not know what realm I would be pulling from. Yeah.
Didn't know you were inviting the fart devil to your joke door.
Maybe a title. I don't know.
It's a long one.
I prefer, where are you getting this jelly? I'm already throwing it out there. That's a good one. Let's move on.
Yeah,
Ben?
How about you, Ben?
I have no fart story to segue into, I guess
a regular story.
Yeah. I don't know. I had a friend in town over the weekend. We hung out. It was great. I rode bikes. I got a new board game table in my living room, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, yeah.
So my apartment is slowly being a furnished place that can host people, so that is good because people are coming to visit in the next few months. So
very cool. Yeah. I remember you telling me about your trip to go get that furniture.
Yeah, you should take a photo so that we can know what it looks like. Not right this second, but like sometime.
I will do it this minute, and I will post it in Slack.
Yeah.
Okay. So you say, sure, let me just get the bodies out of the way first.
Oh. I don't have a fart story, and I'm not telling my body story.
Yeah. No. Yeah, no, I got a bike here recently, just this last week, actually, yeah.
Nice.
Good.
I was going to say, is your brother's house, like, bikeable from where you're at?
Oh, my brother's house is walkable from where I'm at. It just, you know, it is a, you know, 2-minute bike ride, and it's a 5-minute walk.
Nice.
We've got the fall coming up. Got a lot of good riding weather coming. So there's something neat way to get a little more active. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nowhere near as many hills here as as you have out there in Seattle. So
yeah, I have to take the subway away from the hilly areas to bike. So
yeah. My problem is, I'm not going to share any measurements. I cannot find a bike helmet that's big enough for my head.
Okay.
a thing about me is that I've got, what doctors refer to as a ginormous melon. And so, yeah, they're not required by law here, but it seems to make sense to wear one. So I'm trying to figure out how to square that particular circle, and by that circle I mean my just colossal dome.
They need like a big and tall bike helmet store.
I guess it's all bone though, is the thing. Yeah. Oh, so
what you're really telling me is that you're actually a triceratops or something.
Yeah, there must be some like bony plates
on. Yeah, there's growths in there.
Yeah. So yeah. Oh, well, enough about me and my just planet size noggin. How do you guys feel about getting into the show?
I feel excited about the show. Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay, I'll start recording now. my name is Cole. No, we've got the usual kind of thing for you. The grind, the multiplayer, and then rounding out with the unbossed. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw it to you.
Okay, so I have to explain the reasoning why I picked the games I did, because, you know, that was an instant question that you had, Cole, when I popped into your stream and told you what I was playing.
It wasn't a question. it was a disclaimer. It was, oh, do I need to remind you that I didn't tell you to buy that game?
Well, and then also several listeners were like, what? You're playing what? Why? And so I started playing Danganronpa 3 because two things. First off, I figured that it's a game that I get so worked up about that I would get so worked up and angry that I would stop being sad because I'd be very distracted about being mad at this game.
You would transfer. You would transfer the emotion, the intensity of the emotion from one to the
indeed,
other.
Indeed. Yes. Indeed. Because, like, I get so worked up about it. And two, it also happened to be on sale on the digital store thing right about the same time that I was looking at it. And I was like, well, it's dirt cheap. And also, it would distract me. So, cool. I will get this game. So, that's the first thing I played a little bit of. I actually only played through the prologue. And honestly, I feel nothing.
I know that game.
The best reaction you've ever had to a game.
Like, that's not the first time I've said that about a game. Like, yeah. Where I'm just like, I don't feel anything about this thing. I don't. Like, so they started it out. And they introduce the new cast of characters, and then they introduce the Mono Cubs, which are like, is it four or five of them? I don't know. But anyway, they're different colored. They're different colored Monokuma babies who are just like the slapstick comedy routine that rambles on and stuff until actual Monokuma shows up. And like, I guess because I already went through all of that with Monomi on the last game, I was just like, eh, you know, whatever. I mean, it's more of this annoying shit. And like, not only that, but like the prologues have been the weakest part of every single game so far. So like, this doesn't really tell me whether or not I'm going to like the game or not.
Right.
And so all this tells me is that I'm not annoyed by the prologue. Okay. Well, that's cool. you know, I mean, that's better than I was on the last couple of games where I was irritated, you know? So like, all right. The only other comment I really have at this point, because I haven't gotten into the game proper yet, is that the music doesn't really seem as good to me as in the prior games. Like, there's talking in them and I don't dig it. Like, I just don't like how they throw this weird talking about, I don't know, Monokuma or whatever they're babbling about in the background. Like, I don't care for it.
I'll agree with you on that. I think the music is kind of a step down. And when something sticks out as a really good track, I will, you know, go take a look. And it is something from one of the previous two games.
Yeah. So yeah, like that's about like, I guess also the new cast of characters is, of course, different from the prior ones in some ways, but also, you know, similar, you know, like you've got, the character types are different, but like they still fit certain roles and you can kind of tell, okay, that guy's going to die or whatever.
Yeah. It's a little bit like casting a reality show.
Yeah. It's that kind of a thing. The one thing about it that I just have to mention though, because I don't understand, is every one of these games, for some reason, there's a large number of female characters that just have one of their expressions where they're drooling, and it's only the females, and I don't understand why. Like, what is this thing about drooling that is so common? Because there's like three or four at least female characters in this game that I've talked to them and they're just like, and I'm like, what is this shit? Like, what? I don't even understand. Is this somebody's fetish? I mean, like, this is all probably somebody's fetish, but like, that all I can think is that is somebody's fetish, because I don't know why else that is a thing.
When there's one of good,
do you have the choice to kill them in response?
No, this is unfortunately not the ability. Like, I would probably murder everybody before I got out of the prologue. So, I mean, like, you know, that wouldn't work out so well.
Yeah, no, I saw the drooling and I was like, huh, that's weird. That must be some trope from anime that I'm unaware of, so I just disregarded it. Similar,
it's
to
a weird it's a weird translation error from She Thirsty.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, no. I like that. I like that as an explanation, Dennis. Yeah. So I don't know. I have no other comments about the game thus far. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, all right, it's Danganronpa.
Yeah.
I don't feel anything in particular yet. So, you know, like once I get to the actual class trials and stuff like that and the murders start happening, that's when the point when I'll probably, you know, get into it. But like these games, basically, like none of them started out really all that strong, but they usually get stronger towards the middle. And then like my results may vary towards the end for me.
Right.
But like, you know, I anticipate that there's going to be an arc similar to that on this game. And hopefully that is the case and it will get better to where I will dig parts of it. But anyway, so like that was actually kind of a disappointment because I was kind of figuring I'd have like a strong reaction and be mad and be able to like live tweet my pissed off tweets, you know, about whatever. But actually the only tweets I posted were just like LOL or OK.
Yeah,
and like that's
yeah.
all the commentary I had to say about anything I saw. And I'm just like, well, this sure is a thing on my screen. I don't know.
This sure is a thing on my screen.
Yeah. So, anyway, moving on from that, the other thing I started playing has been a lot more lucrative insofar as actually generating conversation and distracting me and all of that. I started playing Final Fantasy XII Remastered on Switch. Where I am, I have just finished riding the airship to the city in the sky looking to save Penelo after the very, very long prologue section, about 8 hours in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Why do people hate Vaughn?
I don't know.
The main character guy. Like, if you want to talk about an annoying Final Fantasy main character, let's talk about Tidus.
Right,
like,
right.
Vaughn has, like, self-awareness. Like, he's chipper, but he's not, like, over-the-top super annoying about being chipper. And,
yeah.
like, he understands when he needs to step back and get out of somebody's face. And he has already, you know, recognized when he has been wrong about something and stated it very
yes.
upfront. So, like, I don't know why people don't like him. He's fine. I mean, like, then again, I am playing with Japanese audio. I've been told that the English voice is terrible, but I don't know. I did not listen to it.
The English voice is substantially poorer than a lot of the other performances, which might kind of contribute to it. I think that there are a couple of reasons just kind of that have to do with the production of the game. More than anything about Vaughn that people have, you know, bad opinions of him. So Final Fantasy XII, you're kind of the character that you start as, and your viewpoint character is this young man named Vaughn who is orphaned by this big conflict, this big war that is happening. And he is kind of swept up in this grand adventure along with some of these other kind of characters who have a bit more tethering them to the main events, you know, to the bigger struggle between the kingdoms and stuff. So one of the criticisms is that, you know, he just kind of doesn't really have anything to do with what's going on, which you can, you know, take or leave that, I suppose. The other being that Vaughn was specifically, it was like a publisher mandate. They wanted to make Bosch, the kind of grizzled war veteran guy, the main character, but they said that won't sell in Japan. So we need to have the main character be a young boy like it always has been in order to sell. I don't know if that's apocryphal or not. He never particularly bothered me, you know, for that first criticism. He has nothing to do here. Like Pinello has less to do there than him,
yeah, right.
You know? And for the other one, it's like, yeah, like Bosch would be a good one, but I don't know. I'm fine. You know, just like the events of that game, the actual plot has to do with bigger political movers and shakers. And even your party is kind of an observer to it. You being an observer to that is a nice little like mirror of that. So, I don't know. That is my explanation.
Okay. Well, that works. That's satisfactory. Thank you for the clarification. Can you also clarify? We were talking on your stream also, again, because this is another place where you get, like, preview of the level in mini version, because I'm usually playing one of the games I'm going to talk about while I'm, you know, in Cole's stream. But anyway, why do you like Balthier a lot?
I like him because he is a Han Solo type. So Final Fantasy XII is just final is just Star Wars. I like Balthier because of his cocky, brash presentation and what's going on beneath that, specifically with his past and in his relationship to what's going on. I don't want to be more specific than that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit why like Locke is a good character in Final Fantasy VI. He's very much in that archetype of the, you know, the cocky rogue who has a little bit more tragedy going on than you expect.
Yeah, see, the thing is that, like, it's interesting because I like that archetype when it comes to Therian from Octopath Traveler, but he's not flashy. He's cocky, but he's not flashy. Mm-hmm. And Balthier is, like, full of himself and flashy, and like I guess the combination of those two things together makes me unimpressed with him. Like, I don't hate him, but like I'm just like, all right. I mean, like, they're really trying to make me like this guy. They really are, but like I don't care. I just don't, you know. And I'm like, okay, well.
See, also his insistence that he is the main character. I like how that is I like how that is an echo about the tension about, you know, who the main character in this actually is. You know. It's, you know, I like him for structural reasons and just, you know, the flashiness works for me. So,
well, you know, then too, like, I'm coming into this as a 30 whatever year old, so I did not play it when it first came out. I may have reacted very differently to him back in the day. You know, again, like, I'm at this age, I suppose I am just a whole lot of not much impresses me. Like, not much impresses me. So you don't impress me, bro. Like, OK, whatever. I mean, like, he's fine. He's, you know, friendly. So that's good. And he's not irritating. So that's good. But, you know, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I'm not super excited about him. But yeah, actually, that's one of my problems, is that I don't really feel much of anything for anybody 8 hours into the game. It's one of those other situations where, like, I just don't... Like, what is drawing me along so far that makes me want to continue playing is a few things. First off, the gameplay mechanics. The battles are so smooth, and it works so well for me to just have everything automated and in the, you know, overview screen. Like, your traveling screen is the same place that you're doing combat. You don't skip out of that into a different screen and have the whole rigmarole with, you know, like, the traditional JRPG, you know, battle phase.
Right.
You know, like, it's all action RPG style, and I like that. That is cool. So that works for me quite a bit, and it streamlines it to where I don't really mind the random battles so much, because I can run away physically if I want to.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
And that is something that that battle system, in combination with the Gambit system, where you are kind of programming these macros for your characters to go through. I have infinite affection for that setup.
Oh yeah, and like, I've only just started getting gambits unlocked and everything to where I can use them. So, you know, like, I'm trying to program in all of that stuff now, and see what works best for me. But yeah, like, all of that being automated is great. It's like, you know, you're there kind of moderating it, and you can, you know, tweak it as you need to if you see, you know, a need for it in the middle of the battle. But definitely like that a lot. And then, like, the overall story. Okay, so what relation does this have to Final Fantasy Tactics? It's the same world, right? That's what it is?
Yes. Or what? So this is Ivalice. Yes. I can never remember which one. So it is related to Final Fantasy Tactics, Vagrant Story, and weirdly, Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. This, I believe, in the timeline is like several hundred years after the events of Final Fantasy Tactics, and on a different continent. I think that more broadly, what's important about it is that it's like a thematic and aesthetic connection, and they share a creator, rather than like the events, you know, that happen with, you know, the War of the Lions, you know, having an echo over here.
Okay, well, because I played Tactics, and I played some of Vagrant Story many moons ago, and I never played, like, I never finished the rest of it, and I don't know how that ties into anything either, but...
Vagrant Story's connection is very tenuous. It is, again, mostly aesthetic.
Is Vagrant Story a thing that I should go play sometime?
I wouldn't be the person to answer that. I've not played very much of it.
Okay. Well, anyway, so yeah, like my tweets have been real productive about this. I've been live tweeting about it, and folks have really enjoyed it to the point that I had a couple of people message me to say that they go to my Twitter without actually having a Twitter account just to read my tweets from time to time,
nice.
Which is like somebody has exposed themselves to Twitter on my behalf to see what I'm talking about whatever I'm playing. So that's a big compliment. So thanks to you guys for that. So the last bout of live tweets primarily concerned themselves with Bosch's fashion sensibilities.
Right. Yeah.
I had a lot to say about everything about Bosch from when you first see him. Mm-hmm. So you can look forward to all of that. I will link you after I am done speaking about it. But also, you know, I think Bosch would probably be the closest I like to liking a character.
He's my favorite. Yeah.
Like I anticipate that I will probably like most of the characters to some degree or other, or at least I will like several of the characters to some degree or other as I progress through the game, but I just haven't seen enough of them. Like, 8 hours sounds like a long time to play, but not in a Final Fantasy game.
The
like,
prologue barely... is way too long.
Yeah, like, this is the prologue. I just finished the prologue. I mean, listener Phil, said the best thing possible when I was like, yeah, so I'm still in the prologue. And he's like, if you are playing a JRPG, you aren't done with the prologue until you've played for a minimum of 3 months. And that's about how it feels like. I have been devoting all this time and I haven't gotten anywhere. So, but that is exactly what I was looking for at this point, was something with a complicated enough narrative or fun enough gameplay that is not twitchy to where like I'm going to stress myself out trying to play it, you know, like that's the kind of thing I was looking for at this point.
Yeah.
So you know, for my purposes, in order to like help me kind of distract myself as I get back into my normal routine without Rami. So
yeah,
you know, so yeah, like that's been fun. Anybody who does not follow me on Twitter is more than welcome to go check my tweets. They're apparently fun enough that people will go look for them. So
the Switch version of this game is really good. I've been very impressed with it, and being able to play it portably, you know, just kind of crashed out on the couch or whatever, has been really good. I'm going to be taking it with me when I travel here. So,
well, like. Have there like, okay, so this is, you know, remastered or whatever. Did they change anything palpably with this?
Not in terms of like general content. I know that they, upscaled some of the textures, and I know that they, used uncompressed versions of some of the audio, even though that gets a little bit weird between some different, you know, like cutscene voice versus in-engine voice. It's kind of incongruous as far as mechanically. This has the Zodiac job system. So when you're able to choose a particular license board for a character, that was not in the original American release of Final Fantasy XII. So that's a pretty big deal. Like without that, everybody has the same license board and kind of evolves to be the same character mechanically. With this, you're forced to specialize. That is good. Additionally, it used to be that in order to make certain gambits, you had to find the components, like the, you know, like the ifs and thens, as treasure out in the world. Whereas, you know, once you get the ability to make gambits, you can just make everything. So this means you get more interesting treasure in the world, more useful stuff, and your like the main system of the game is not like limited and held back from you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess somebody would probably ask this question, too. What did I make everybody so far? Vaughn is an Ulan, yeah, whatever, the Dragoon equivalent, spear person. And Penelo I made into a what is it, Foe Breaker, I think, a tank.
Right.
Balthier was a machinist just because he had a gun and it was just easy to slot him in there. I did not realize he can actually still use the gun regardless of what he turns into.
Right.
And I just didn't change him after that. I was like, whatever, it's fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
And Fran, I had originally as an archer for the same reason. I thought, well, she has a bow. I don't have any other weapons for her. I need to make her an archer. But then I switched her over to a black mage more recently, and I don't know how I'm going to like that because I don't have enough gambit slots or enough stuff to do a lot with that. So I don't know if I'm going to like that or if I'm going to want to switch, or I don't know, we'll see.
Right.
And then Bosch I have as a red battle mage, so so yeah, nice. That's my party set up right now.
So you haven't got an Ash yet?
No.
Okay.
I don't know what an Ash is, but I did first off, Ben, you have a very nice table and chairs. That's very pretty.
Yeah.
All right.
The place looks
beautiful.
Yeah, your place looks cool. Also, he posted a very useful link for you, Cole, that you need to check out. Helmets for big heads.
A lot of those links are dead. I found that. Thank you, though, Ben.
Aww. Yeah. Okay. Well, and then, of course, I copied in some of my fashion commentary about Bosch. So, you know, that's the thing. So, anyway, that's it. That's all I got. That's all I've been playing. I'm going to be playing for a while. So, just Elder Scrolls Blades did not have enough in it for me to be distracted sufficiently. So, you know, I had to shuffle off. But anyway, that's all.
Nice. Cool. You're making me want to go in and continue my Switch playthrough. So,
yay. Do the thing.
Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
I have remarkably little. I continue playing Resident Evil 2, and I beat it with the second playthrough as Claire. Mm-hmm. So I got to see there's a like joint ending if you beat both of them, I think.
Yes.
So I got to see that, and that was fine. I think I'm done with the game, though.
It was, cool.
You were right last week when you said that it's not really markedly different than the other run-through. There's a few things that are, you know, kind of shuffled around, like events. There's a few like conclusions you see that you don't see in the other one. So that's fine, I guess. So there's like a little bit, there's just enough to make it like I guess maybe it's okay to play the other one. There's like a few different settings that you have that you don't have in the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. It's fun enough. I definitely miss Resident Evil 4 though. I think I mentioned this last week, but I think my biggest complaint about the game is like, your options are either try to run around the zombies or kill the zombies. Like there's not as much of a knifing, like non ammo producing way to, or ammo consuming way to kill the zombies like there is in Resident Evil 4.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that like a little bit limiting. And so that's, I guess my kind of comparison of it versus 4.
Yeah.
I don't know. How does it compare in 6? Is that closer to Resident Evil 2, or is that closer to Resident Evil 4 and its combat?
I'll leave that to you, Joel.
What about if it's 6 is combat? Like, I didn't play much of the combat in 2 because I only did the little demo and then watched you play.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take that then. 6 feels a little bit more like 4. Follows very much the same kind of line. Like you have a knife, or you have melee that you can deploy at any time, like in 4. Whereas with 2, you have your knife, but it has limited durability. You're gonna be cycling through them. 2, like those items. So your knives are the stun gun and anything like that, like those have more in common with the defense items in the remake of 1, where you're less using them to attack with, and you're more carrying them around to get zombies off when they when they grab.
It's like the pocket knife in the Friday the 13th game. It's like a get out of jail free card.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
I did like the weapon variety. That was one thing that was nice between the two run-throughs, is the weapons are completely different between the two of them.
Yeah.
That was cool. I think you unlock new weapons when you do second run-throughs as well.
So
I guess what
Second run through, you start with a different gun than you otherwise would. So with Claire, you're using the repeater. Not the repeater, okay. You're using the revolver that she fires by hammering the trigger or fanning the hammer. There we go. Sorry, I got my gun parts mixed up. And then Claire always gets the spark shot instead of the flamethrower.
Okay. Does Leon start with anything different on the second run through?
He starts with something different that I cannot remember. I made a note of Claire's because I do not like Claire's weapon like that.
Oh, the hammer fanner.
Yeah, the hair. Yes.
That hurts. That hurts to say. Yes. Well, the one thing that leads me to believe there's something else, because I thought you can get a rocket launcher at some point, because I saw Reddit GIFs of this when the game first came out that like Mr. X will walk away from you if you aim a rocket launcher at him.
I think that's one you can unlock. Beating the game in a certain amount of time. That is like the unlimited rocket launcher is a long and story tradition in RE.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Gotcha.
By the way, Resident Evil 4, 5, and 6 triple pack is supposed to be coming out on Switch. Yeah, so that's a thing.
Yeah, and it will be $740.
Right? Nah, but anyway, yeah. That means that my co-oping of Resident Evil 6 can continue infinitely.
Take it on the go.
I can take it on the go and do it anywhere with my Switch. Oh, isn't that great?
So I don't think I have too much more to say about it other than I need to find a new game to play. I found a new game to play, but I haven't get it tomorrow, so I'll talk about that next week.
Give us a preview, come on. What do you
it's spoilers. You can't ask him to give spoilers.
Okay. It's a game I feel conflicted about buying, so I'm probably gonna have to donate money to a charity for it. That probably gives it away.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool. I will not force you. I will not force you to divulge more than that.
Okay.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, not too much new. I'm playing a lot more Nomansky and enjoying it. I said on the Slack, I feel like an idiot after all my complaining about the flight controls last week, that I just did not realize that flight turning is on roll instead of yaw for the Move controller.
Okay.
So if the move controller is like sitting flat on a table, I was trying to turn it by rotating it clockwise and counterclockwise, whereas I should have just been rolling it towards one side of the table or the other.
Oh, yeah, it has the accelerometer. Gotcha.
Yeah, and my natural hand motion when I tried to control it with yaw would roll the controller enough that would kind of register.
Yeah.
But then not really, and not really do what I wanted.
Right.
And so I unfortunately spent a lot of time on the struggle bus with the flight controls. Mm-hmm. They're still not great because turning is yaw instead of rolling the ship. But at least I've understood it's rolling the controller to do that. That's made it slightly more natural. And thank God I discovered that about 5 minutes before I got into my first space battle.
Gotcha.
Which would have been impossible and frustrating with my, previous knowledge of the controls. As it was perfectly fun. And it's not quite the Ace Combat VR experience that I loved so much. Mm-hmm. But it's, it's VR flight sim feels good. And when you're dogfighting in VR, no matter what the circumstances, it's going to feel good.
Yeah.
I previously in the game, I had been kind of standing up when I was walking around a planet and recentering the screen when I did so, and then sitting down when I got into my ship and recentering the screen so it would work. That just a little sense. More, line up with what I was seeing in the game. Mm-hmm. I've kind of abandoned that, and I'm just standing up all the time now. and that feels a little weird in a dogfight when you're like pulling, high G maneuvers to get behind someone and fire at them. I feel like I should be falling one way or another right now. But I'm telling myself that there's advanced anti-grav systems that, are neutralizing the G forces. And that's working just fine.
Yeah. Wait a second. Have you fallen over yet using VR?
No. I have, at a friend's house using their VR, come very close to punching them in the face and diving down their stairs.
Yeah.
But that was like, that was a while ago. Those days are behind me. I'm a veteran now.
Yeah, no, there is a ceiling fan in the middle of my living room.
Oh, no.
Centered right in front of my television.
No.
Yeah, no, I've got caught up and I've had to turn the ceiling fan off when I play.
I have scared the shit out of myself just standing up from a normal gaming session and stretching with my controller, you know, it's still in my hand, uh-huh. and like hands above my head to stretch. Whack!
The whacka thwacka.
Yeah. And somehow the controller survives. So kudos to Sony for a quality product.
Yeah.
I will say on the flight side as well for Nemanski, I think they've been updating the game even since the release of Beyond and like trying to tune it. I think they've heard the feedback. I need to go back and look at screenshots to prove it, but I think they have changed the shape of the joystick in the game to more closely match what they want you to be doing with your hand to control the stick.
Oh, that's cool. So you get feedback.
Yeah. So whereas before it was just kind of a joystick like you'd imagine a joystick, now it's kind of this curved forward ergonomic shape that matches a little more closely what you would be doing if you're holding your controller flat or parallel to the ground.
Yes.
Which is now that I understand the whole role mechanic, the ideal way to be piloting the ship.
Right.
So kudos to them. I don't know if it was just always that way and I didn't notice it or this truly is a change. But I appreciate it either way.
Nice.
Yeah, I've started to go through the Artemis quest line, which is kind of finding this traveler who's somehow kind of stuck outside of space and time. I never quite finished it in my last run through of the game, and so I'm excited to actually like pursue it through to the end. The other thing that's really interesting to me is when the game launched, like at the very beginning, the overt quest was to find the center of the galaxy and do so at the behest of this thing called the Atlas. And it was just, it's this big red eye in your mind that you're not really sure what it is, but it's beckoning you to the center of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always, you know, wanted to do that, never done it, but I'm very curious and have managed not to spoil myself about what's there. I'm guessing it's going to be a letdown. Just again, hype cycle is so far ahead of this game, mm-hmm. but you know, I'm curious to do that. However, the new stuff that they added includes this anomaly that has these explorers in it that send you out on this different path. That's kind of the Artemis quest line. And they kind of make some weird references that maybe Atlas is not a very good thing, or there's something nefarious about it.
Something that's manipulating the entire galaxy could be bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
who knew? And the interesting thing is that, you know, normally it's like, oh, okay, good choice, bad choice. I get it. I'm going to ignore that path. I'm going to do the bad playthrough. I'll do the Atlas path. But the way they refer to it is so interesting. And it really conflicted me because the character, the explorer that you're talking with goes like, oh, you're interested in the Atlas. Well, you know, I managed to escape from it and, you know, I don't recommend it, but if you're going to do it, I'll help you. I want you to be safe. So I, you know, that kind of scares me, but you can do it if you want. Mm. And like that response was so much more conflicting than just like, oh no, that's the evil playthrough. Like that it's stuck in my mind. Like I felt guilty for still wanting to go and explore this thing. Cause I have this friend who's like, look, you know, if you want to get high, just make sure I'm there. I'll take care of you. I'll make sure I got right. You know, like, it's really funny. So just a nice little nuance for the game that I appreciated from a story standpoint.
Nice.
And in meeting those travelers, I did reach the newly revamped Anomaly, which was that big multiplayer thing that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. It is a much larger space, so it's got kind of a TARDIS vibe going on where you can see the entire thing from your spaceship and fly up to it. And it's this globe in space. And you fly in and it opens up to this space that is way, way larger than what you flew into, which right. I thought was a nice touch. And there's now like all these other travelers' spaceships there. There's other travelers running around. So it's got a multiplayer component. You're just ambiently running into people. I'm still waving at everyone in VR. And I don't know if that translates to a wave animation in the game.
That'd be weird if it didn't.
But I will say that the NPCs, if you wave at them in VR, will wave back.
Oh.
And I laughed out loud the first time I waved at a little Gek, which is this kind of squat, happy-go-lucky thing, and it gave me finger guns back.
Little Ewok gave me finger guns.
Like, yeah. Yes, this is the No Man's Sky I've always wanted to play.
it could be that that the people who the other players, they are not on VR.
I expect as much. I know VR is a very small percentage, but I know I've heard people talking about, oh yeah, you can wave and people see it in the game, and I don't know any controller input to wave in VR other than literally just doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, still having enormous amounts of fun, and can intend to continue playing it as my main VR squeeze for a while here. But that's No Man's Sky.
Nice.
I guess I do have something new, but it is also technically very old. I'm playing this game that released today called WoW Classic.
Ooh, yeah.
Might have heard of it. I got you know, my board game group are all playing it, and they got me to pony up the $15 to check it out. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, so far it's been an interesting experience. I'm feeling conflicted about it.
How so?
I'm not able to get out of the starting area. The bosses are these like three statues with glowing red eyes. And I can see the rest of the area I'm trying to get to. I just haven't able to get past. The enemy that's been giving me trouble is this text box that says realm is full, positioning queue 10,000 plus.
No, okay. No, I knew you were doing something. Yeah, no, that is very authentic to the launch experience of WoW. And not even the launch, like what WoW Classic is what? WoW and Burning Crusade, or is it just basically for the first 3 years that game was out, like it was infamously crowded. You had to wait to play.
Yeah, and they've done a lot to make servers better. They even released extra new servers in once they saw how many people were signing up, and it's still not enough. So I think it's version 1.13.2 of the game, if that means anything. I don't know what expansions that means it has or anything like that. But yeah, so the other thing is I would love for them to tone down the RNG on the timer aspect, because I see everything from 500 to 5 minutes and between. It's currently at 56. I've just had it on since I got home from work, and you know, maybe I'll be able to play before my subscription expires. We'll see.
if things hold true, and it continues to be a problem, they might give you bonus time.
Or a refund. Who should I complain at to make that happen?
Just yell at your window.
They're listening. Mm.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been doing on the video game front. I got to go to a game store over the weekend called Time Warp Games and Cards. It's in the Eastgate Mall in Cincinnati, and they were putting on an event for Extra Life, and I guess everywhere around the country it was like tabletop weekend for Extra Life. And so they were doing a thing where, you know, they had special events and games, but I got to go and kind of meet up with several people in the game development community, board game development community, that I kind of interacted with either at Gen Con or over the phone. And I have to say, I've just continually been amazed by how welcoming and helpful the board game development community in Cincinnati is. Like, everyone is excited to connect you. Everyone has wonderful feedback. Just a great group of people. So I thoroughly enjoyed that. I got to set up a table and like have my game out, demoed it to several people. I did like $5 of any sales I made to Extra Life, and that was nice.
Cool.
But that was a great experience. The thing that I'm most excited about, though, is for anyone who hasn't heard me talk about Deck of Wonders before, I've been designing it as a solitaire game, and I've been 100% focused on that one player aspect and making that really sing. And I get questions again and again. Anyone who talks to me at length about the game eventually asks, well, can you play with more than one player? And my answer is always like, I don't know. But I think I had the idea while I was at Time Warp for how I might be able to do that. So it's a lo-fi way, but I think it's going to be pretty elegant. Basically, if you want to play with multiple players, you know, you bring your deck, the other person brings theirs, you play it parallel with each other. And every draw phase, before you draw from your pile, you have the option to draw from the other player's hand instead. And so you kind of have this, like, you know, if you're in trouble and they have the perfect card, you can draw from them, but they have to give up that card. And
you know, kind of their hand size goes down. So if they're in a precarious situation themselves, you know, it may or may not be a good way to go. Mm-hmm. And so that's the mechanic I've got in mind. And then eventually you can start designing co-op bosses that maybe have a unique prescription of cards for each side, or, you know, whatever you want. But that was kind of I was worried that to do anything co-op related would make me just redesign the game from the ground up. Mm-hmm. But I think that will be a really elegant way to allow really as many people as want to play together, while kind of self-balancing and having them interact in interesting ways.
Yeah. And with as expandable as you're planning to make this, like mm-hmm. coming up with, a deck that you can put out that is geared toward that kind of play seems reasonable.
Yeah. You know, if this card is pulled from your hand, draw one or something like that, you know, there's all kinds of things you could do with it. So I am very excited about that. That was my breakthrough from the weekend. In addition to meeting a ton of really cool people. And that's my Deck of Wonders update.
Nice.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah. I wish I had more to talk about, but I really don't. It's mostly been doing prep for other shows. I have a question for you, Dennis. In the past, you've talked about virtual pinball stuff that you played. What game were you getting those tables under, and what were you playing them on?
Yeah, so in the way back, Star Wars Pinball, which was done by Zen Pinball Studios, was the base game of that, which I think only had three tables, was a PlayStation Plus a game. Okay. I don't know why game was so hard to find. Yeah, it was a PlayStation Plus game. And so I found it through that, and then I've just bought all my tables through that app, which is Star Wars themed. So I think as long as you download Zen Pinball 2, you should be able to get anything that you want, including the Star Wars table. The specific app, or the Star Wars tables, the specific app that I'm playing on is a Star Wars branded one.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Zen Pinball 2, I think, is the one that is like the base system that everything runs on.
Yeah, I'll have to go and take a look and see if I pick that up that month. Yep, just mm-hmm. curious. I'd been preparing for another thing by playing a lot of pinball recently.
Very cool.
Yep. The only other thing really that I've been dipping into with any real note is I've played enough Last of Us on Hexcrank where I feel comfortable like talking about it again. That has been really fun to stream and have people react to it. A lot of old hands who have, you know, played the game over and over again, you know, adding, you know, detail, talking about things that I may have missed. All of that has been very fun. The Last of Us continues to be just a really good game. And I was worried that coming to it, knowing everything that I do about the way everything shakes out, that it would, you know, take everything out. Instead, what it has led to for me is just a real appreciation of what a piece of shit Joel is.
Did not see that one coming.
Yeah. No. That's something that I've grown an appreciation of. But yeah, continuing to have a good time. It's harder than I remember it being. I don't know if that is just because I'm playing it in front of people, and I'm always going to goof up in hopefully hilarious ways. Not intentionally, but, you know, it's just going to happen. But yeah, a lot of tough scenarios in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any questions about The Last of Us?
I was gonna say, outside of Joel, I mean, how do you feel about the other characters, having not seen them in a little while?
I forgot how briefly David was in the game. Not our David, yeah. but the villain David, kind of the winter arc. He makes such a huge impression, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was. Yeah, it threw me off guard because I thought he loomed larger in my memory than he does in the actual like runtime of the game. Mm-hmm. Ellie is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her kind of growth and her relationship with Joel is really fun to watch. Yeah, I think those are the three main ones.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Every time you said David when you were streaming, I was just like, wait, what?
Yeah, no, not David. No, not that one, the other one.
Yeah.
I mean, probably would be equally at home in the post-apocalypse.
True, true. Yeah. So that's all for me. I don't have a way to end the segment, so...
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask the listeners a question and then they answer it. Dennis, what was the question that you asked the nice people?
So my question was about the way that your opinion of a game can evolve, especially because you spend so much time with games. What element of a game's mechanics or design really turned you off at first, but grew on you over time?
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Mike, who says, there are three things I can't stand in most video games: time limits, breakable weapons, and not being able to save anywhere I want. And yet, Dead Rising 2 is one of my all-time favorite games. I bought it knowing that it contained all of those elements, but was curious to see what the series was all about. Not unlike Dark Souls, but I'll let someone else tell their story. In the end, I came to appreciate its restrictions as essential to the experience, and I loved the ridiculous environments and characters. I go back and I replay it every year, and I'm about due for another. Ben, you dig these games, right?
Dead I was going to say that. Yeah, that's a game where I think your character gets better each playthrough that you have with it, so that you're probably constantly rewarded by doing that.
So. Yeah. Yeah, no, a lot of people were really put off of those, specifically the time play in Dead Rising 1. They're like, oh, it's stressful. And it's like, wait, you're bummed that a horror game is stressful?
Yeah, right. Like, that's like what horror games are all about.
Yeah. Good. It's kind of unique. It's kind of unique in that it's like you do runs of the game. And right. So it's not really set up of, oh, you play the game once and you're done. It's just like you're playing a game is attempting to beat the game. Right. And you probably won't do it the first few times because you like need to level up. Yeah. So
you're not going to see everything. There's optional content and people need to see.
I think there's something weird about that just ticks in my brain of like a playthrough any game where you know you're not able to get to everything. Even if I don't get to everything in a game, I like to know I can if I really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I totally get the stress of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I get that too.
Yeah. Let's see, Jala, what does Lindsay say?
You know, when I muted my mic to go across the room and turn off my AC, I knew I was going to be the next person and that you were going to start before I got back. Okay, so anyway, Lindsay says, turn-based RPGs were never my thing until I played South Park Stick of Truth. Now, saying that, I still have more love for the mechanics of South Park than Final Fantasy or many others because of the guard system it has. Pressing a button before impact to lessen the blow took a bit to master, but I think all RPGs could benefit from this mechanic. Many times I die and get discouraged from even trying an RPG because it does not have this mechanic. I guess that mechanic just broke me. Or maybe I haven't found the RPGs that implement the guard function as South Park did. Shrug.
Take a look at the Mario RPGs. Super Mario RPG is pretty antiquated, but Mario and Luigi, any of those games for the Game Boy Advance or DS or 3DS, those are going to add that. Also, Paper Mario.
Okay, I was going to say, didn't Paper Mario have a ton of that?
Yep. Yeah.
There you go.
I believe the South Park Stick of Truth like specifically took that system from Paper Mario. Yeah.
Cool. So,
and it just in case you live in existence where a JRPG recommendation can find purchase. Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Noah say?
Noah says, generally in action games, upkeep mechanics like repairing equipment, needing to eat for stat bonuses, or too much inventory management become tedious slogs. Monster Hunter World, I initially disliked that you had to sharpen your weapon during hunts, pick a meal before hunts, and carefully plan your limited item pouch based on what foe you are facing. However, the more I familiarize myself with all the mechanics and immerse myself in the rhythm of the gameplay loop, suddenly all those little management tasks became important tactical decisions. Now I'm at the point where preparing for the hunt is just as fun as the hunt itself, and having prepared the perfect loadout for the specific hunt you're on is immensely satisfying. All those little choices really sell the feeling of mastery of prepping for a hunt. Sweet.
Yeah, planning. Planning is good. No, I'm serious.
Like, I love it when a plan comes together.
I've not played very much Monster Hunter World, but it's something that I always really enjoy about playing The Witcher 3, you know, for instance. Kind of has a little bit of a similar
Oiling jam. Up your blades.
Yep. You know, trying to find the right stuff for the decoction that you need, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Reading the codex to figure out what you need. Yeah, it's all good. Let's see. Dennis, what does Jeffrey say?
He says, the upgrade mechanics of the Soul series never really jived with me until 2, when I started to appreciate the elemental damages. Taking that back to Dark Souls 1 really helped me get through some of the tougher bits, rather than just brute forcing my way through.
So 2 adds just a tremendous number of elements that you can, just so many more things. It's closer to Demon Souls than 1. 1 just does a very poor job of explaining it. To you. Mm-hmm. Not that 2 does any better, but I think that the abundance lets you like figure out the differentiations.
Yeah, here's a game where it doesn't take 2 playthroughs to really grok it. It takes 2 games to really grok it.
2 full games, yes. Let's see here. Greg writes, using the Bionic Arm in Bionic Commando games, so used to jumping in platformers. As a kid playing the NES one for the first game, it took a while for me to wrap my head around the concept that you couldn't jump and had to get around with your arm in a totally different way. Even though I'm better at Bionic Commando games now, it always takes me a bit to get used to it again. But once you get going, you're really flying, right?
Yeah, this is a great answer. Like, yeah. It is so unintuitive.
Yeah. I'm due for a replay of that game. It's been too long. Let's see, Jala, what does Dan say?
Dan says, the sparse inventory space in Resident Evil 7 in this example. It was really annoying at first, and I couldn't pick things up that I wanted due to having no space. What that ended up meaning was that I was thinking far more about what I needed now in the near future. It made me think more deeply about the story and my playstyle with the enemies in that stage, as opposed to blindly picking up shiny items without thinking. Made for a more immersive experience, something which pays off massively for Resident Evil 7.
This would have been one of mine, but Dan took it. That's a good answer. Not just because I would have used it. It's just a good answer. Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Martinez say?
Martinez says, like a lot of people, I had a really hard time getting into the combat mechanics of Dark Souls. That point in time, I was so used to all the handholding of modern video games and got absolutely wrecked by everything in Dark Souls threw at me. Timing dodges were hard, blocking sucked because I ran out of stamina, every swing felt like it took forever, and parrying someone seemed impossible. It didn't take long for me to put the game down. The game mechanics didn't click for me until a friend of mine sat down with me and guided me all the way through Blighttown.
Sure.
At that point, I felt confident enough in my abilities to continue on alone. And from that day on, it turned into one of my all-time favorite games.
Yep, stamina management in that game is a huge wall to get through. When you're trying to, you know, when you're coming from a regular character action game, trying to tappa, and then you get, you know, you get your face thrown back in your face. Yeah, no, I can totally see it, but it is the defining characteristic of those games. Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says Fallout 3 being in first person. I played the hell out of Fallout 1 and 2. And when I learned Part 3 was coming years later, I was overjoyed until I found out it would be in first person. Fallout games are isometric, you heathens. I bought it anyway because, well, it was more Fallout. I spent the first couple of hours in the vault mentally converting the game's environments into traditional, proper Fallout perspective and finding the first-person view wanting. This lasted until I exited Vault 101. When I opened the vault door and had my first look out at the beautiful, horrible wasteland spreading out before me as far as the eye can render, I became a convert.
Yeah. I'd be curious if Ricky had played any Bethesda games before that.
I had the reverse experience because I came to Fallout 3 as my first Fallout game and then tried to go back and play 1 and 2. It was a really hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, no, it's worth it. It's definitely a medicine that is worth taking. You know, not the kind that saves your life, but, you know, I don't know. The metaphor breaks down very quickly.
The kind that enriches it.
Yeah. You know, vitamin pills don't do shit. Anyway, or multivitamins don't do shit. The metaphor broke down. It wasn't apt. It wasn't apt at all. Casey writes, speaking of Fallout, the base building mechanics in Fallout 4 didn't interest me at all. And in fact, I entirely ignored base building my first time through the story. What a mistake. And now, several expansions in, including one specifically for base building, I really love it. Building up many cities, trying to keep each one unique, has me at about triple the hours I spent on the story. Building stuff in games is fun. 100%. And Jala finishes out with Ollie.
Ollie says, I really liked the game Alien Trilogy on PS1. So when Alien Resurrection was announced, I was super excited, but I hated the control scheme. It felt unintuitive, and I was certain it would be a complete waste of time and be soon forgotten in other FPS games. And IGN/GameSpot agreed with me. Turns out we were both wrong, and it's an excellent control system.
This is delightful.
I love this. Do you want to read it, Jala, or should I?
Go for it.
Okay. This is an excerpt from the review. Again, this is on the PlayStation. From IGN, or from GameSpot, rather. The game's control setup is the most terrifying element. The left analog stick moves you forward, back, and strafes right and left, while the right analog stick turns you and can be used to look up and down. What madness is this, you morons?
Yeah, in October of 2000. Boy, oh, that's goodness. A long time ago. Boy, wow, yeah. Things have changed.
Oh, man. So thank you, everybody, for writing in. We should probably give our answers. Because I can't reach that, you know, I don't know, I can't reach that far back for this. Breath of the Wild's destructible weapons initially rubbed me the wrong way. You know, the idea that you don't have like Link's master sword at, you know, at least at the start, right? And you're constantly churning through monsters' weapons and just sticks that you pick up off the ground. And like, maybe you go into a temple and you get a, you know, an ancient weapon that will last you, you know, like it'll be really powerful for a little bit. All that, I was like, man, I've got nothing to like hold on to. However, cycling through those and kind of like constantly keeping an eye out for what I will go to next or trying to adapt that to the situation led to a lot of really cool, dramatic gameplay scenarios where, you know, the right weapon came along at the right time to make all the difference. And it was real cool. So I went from being skeptical to really enjoying that part.
Nice.
Yeah. Jala, how about you?
The flowchart and Virtue's Last Reward.
Ooh. Oh,
interesting. I don't love how it's used in VLR, and that was one of the things that first set me off about that game. However, in Zero Time Dilemma, it works a lot smoother, and something, for example, like Steins Gate could really use a flowchart. That would have made Steins Gate less of a frustration when I was trying to go through that and trying to get the rest of the endings for that, because in Steins Gate, there are points where you answer emails and texts and stuff like that and like have phone calls and things. And like, depending upon what you do, it'll change some of the results of what goes on. And like, you think, okay, this isn't that big of a deal, or maybe it changes something small, but then like, no, like a whole big section could change, you know, over these small elements.
Yeah.
So if there was like a flow chart, you could go back through without having to go through the entire thing and go, oh shit, I skipped it again, when you're speeding through
right.
or whatever, and then have to
gotta reload. You know,
like, yeah. that was a frustration. And so like playing Steins Gate made me appreciate the flow chart, although I still don't like VLR and I still don't like the way it's used in VLR, because it doesn't give me kind of like the shortcut you know, indications and stuff the way that, like, it just, I don't know, it just seemed to work a lot better in Zero Time Dilemma and cut out watching scenes over again. Like, you had to restart so much and go back through the same stuff over again. And that's one of the elements that I did not appreciate about it. But yeah. Again, like, Zero Time Dilemma did it a lot better. And, like, the iteration of the flowchart there, if I could just copy and paste that into basically any visual novel style, you know, or visual novel influenced, you know, mixed genre game, mm-hmm. I would just put it there. Yeah. So.
Nice. Let's see here. Ben, how about you?
I was trying to think of an answer to this question. I cannot think of a good example of this. So I'm going to
plead the fifth, I guess. You're just too nice and you just like stuff, man.
I think it's like the opposite. I'll bounce off of things and then I just don't give it a second chance. So I don't give it a chance to redeem itself.
But, well, okay, you're decided about stuff, and you know, like, once you pick a lane, you go in that lane.
God, Ben, why are you so judgy?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's fine. It's fine not to have an answer. Cool. Well, if you would like, thank you so much, everybody, for writing in with your answers.
Oh, you don't get off that easy.
Oh no!
I gotta drop mine.
Yeah, you. I'm so sorry. Usually Ben goes last on stuff, and I totally goofed up. I apologize, Dennis.
You're fine. You're fine. I'll make this one's quick. It is Trackmania Turbo, and the fact that the game has four different cars, and the game, as you progress, you have to go through segments of, I think it's 20 tracks or 10 tracks per car, and then you swap to a new one. Which it feels like just as you're starting to wrap your mind around the way that one car controls, you have to start from square one and relearn the next one. And just with as precise as that game is and as much of a razor's edge as you're on, I found myself in rage mode being like, why do they have multiple different types of cars? Like, this is so frustrating. But then once you go through the cycle of the four a couple times and you kind of appreciate the unique things that each car can do, you really like the way that it keeps things fresh. Hmm. And anytime you start to get bored with the game or feel like you're in a rut, you just switch to a different type of car. And it's a new set of challenges and kind of a new feel that you can sink your teeth into.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Now have I got everybody? Now I'm paranoid. Has everybody
scarred you?
Okay. Thank you everybody for writing in. Yeah. If you would like to participate in these, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. However, this coming Monday, Labor Day here in the United States, September 2nd, there will be no show because it is a holiday. So no show next week, but we'll be back after that.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Jala, what's going on with Google Stadia?
So, I reported on this before, but Google is joining the game streaming market with Stadia. Thanks for spoiling, Cole. Sorry. So, it's a cloud-based platform set to launch in November of this year. So, Google Stadia Base offers 1080p and 60 FPS service with stereo sound for free. Stadia Pro is $10 a month for 4K HDR image quality, 5.1 surround sound, and access to Stadia's free game library. So some people like the idea of instantly being able to play games instead of having to download and patch, and also being able to play on any screen, because theoretically, wherever Stadia may be found, be it on your PC, mobile, or whatever, you can play games from the cloud on anything without downloading stuff. Others, of course, worry about response time of a cloud-based gaming service. And also, for example, if your internet goes out, then there goes your game.
Right.
So those are some things. Google, of course, says that this could change how games are made, in that rather than being tailored to specific tech, you know, like a PlayStation or what the average computer user has or whatever, they could build with the broader capacity of a data center in mind and thereby This could lead to more ambitious titles being created. It could also change how publishers sell games, and that could be a good or bad thing. Like, instead of trying to sell games individually, they may do subscription services for their games. Now, that sounds like a nightmare to me if you have every publisher trying to get a subscription fee for their library of games.
What is this, so television and movies?
Yeah. So that's essentially what potential things could happen. Like, that's not, what definitely is going to happen. But, like, I think the last time I reported on this, it was in beta or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, it's actually going to be launching in November. So this is the cloud-based video game streaming service. Yeah. So.
And they're selling a controller. I think they're selling some kind of dedicated box for it. I still don't know what to make of it. For me personally, I'm hesitant to basically go in on anything Google does. They drop stuff, right?
Yeah, they drop stuff. They try it out, and if it doesn't work, they drop it, and that's how it goes.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll be curious. I'm intrigued by the idea because before you had mentioned it, I hadn't thought about games that were designed to be played at a data center, you know, instead of just on one particular machine. Like, that I think is cool, but yeah, no, I just, no, but I think that's cool. That was something I hadn't considered.
Mm.
Yeah. You sound skeptical, bud.
No. I agree with that. Like, I think that's one possibility that opens up that you can't do with regular games.
Yeah.
But
we'll see. November. We will see in November.
I'm going to be playing a bunch of other games in November. I'm not going to see anything like that.
Yeah, Outer Wilds is going to be a thing. Is that the one? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's
Outer Worlds.
Outer Worlds, yeah.
Death Stranding. Maybe a Star Wars game if it's good.
Oh, you said the magic word. Hey, Ben, what's going on with Death Stranding?
Oh, yeah. So this is close to a week old, or this is exactly a week old of a news article, so it's going to be like a week and a half old when people listen to this. But a video came out with gameplay for Death Stranding at Gamescom last week that shows a new feature of the game, which is controlling Norman Reedus's pee. You can pee on the environment, and apparently that can unlock certain things. Apparently one of the mechanics in the game is they're trying to do some things where the game's like kind of like a shared environment between everyone playing with it. So apparently you can share like safe houses and things like that.
You can mark your territory.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. They released something that said if enough players pee in the same spot, quote unquote, something good will happen.
I think New Orleans would disagree with you on that one there, buddy.
And in the trailer, it shows Norman Reedus peeing on a spot and a mushroom grows out of the ground.
No.
Okay.
Damn, yeah, no.
So
I don't know what you guys thought soapstone was this whole time. Have you looked at the item picture?
In case there is any doubt, this is definitely a Kojima game. So
the Death Stranding and the joys of pissing al fresco. I don't care for it. No, it's fine. I mean, like Metal Gear Solid 5 had a make your horse shit button. So yeah.
What?
No. If you took Diamond Horse in as your partner for a mission, if you rode your horse in, you could press a button to make him drop horse apples.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I don't know that it served like an explicit gameplay function, but I'm sure there was. I mean, it's a Kojima game, so it probably like you could poop in a road and somebody would slip in it or whatever.
It was definitely an explicit function, but yeah.
This is a scatological episode. I am so sorry.
Yeah. I apologize for pushing us in that direction.
It was me again. This is more abject suffering bleed over is where this came from. I think, let's see.
Everything is suffering.
They're all is aching. Dennis, what's going on over in, the Majora's Mask speedrunning community?
Yeah, I'm just reading in the right places now, but it seems like there have been just a spate of Zelda speedrunning advances.
in the past several weeks. Ocarina is, or excuse me, Majora's Mask is no exception to that. Mm-hmm. So the Majora's Mask speedrunners have figured out a way to significantly reduce the time to complete for their any percent run. But it's in a really interesting way. They discovered that by playing the ocarina 63 times in exactly the right way, you could only in speedrunning, folks, right. You could overload the game in a way that organically, like through just normal button inputs, would open up a debug menu.
Yeah.
And from there, it's essentially a game shark then. You know, it's essentially a cheat. You can spawn in whatever items you want, take them on your merry way, and win the game. And so it requires basically standing still and playing the damn ocarina for over 10 minutes straight.
It's a risky strategy. Let's see if it pays off.
but overall, essentially getting a god mode at the end of that is enough to make up for the time lost.
Yeah.
So just incredible ingenuity, and I'm amazed every time I read one of these things just by the way people can take apart a game.
Yeah.
Just by playing it
specifically in 64 Zeldas.
Yeah, my goodness. The one controversial thing is that, you know, okay, technically this falls under like the no cheat any percent category, but you know, does it really? If essentially you're opening up a menu for cheats. You know, like playing a lot of PC games, I can hit the right button to open up console commands.
Right.
And that's a part of the natural game inputs. Right. So yeah. What makes this okay? And that's kind of the conversation that's happening right now.
Yeah.
But an incredible feat of creativity and abuse of gaming systems on display here.
Yeah. To explain or to show how momentous this was, prior, just quoting the article here a little bit, before the Ocarina glitch was discovered, the record was 1 hour and 15 minutes and 52 seconds. And mind you, like when a record is beaten by like a minute, it's a big deal in that community. Yeah. When this guy, last name Haugen, came through and figured it out, the new record time is 49 minutes and 42 seconds.
So oh my lord.
More than 16 minutes.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Cut off more than 26 minutes cut off of it. Ridiculous.
Yeah, kudos to them.
Yeah. That's amazing. I don't know. I don't have anything more to add to it. Speed runs. And for me, I saved the icky one for last. Have we talked about swatting on the show in the past?
I'm sure we have.
Yeah. Do I need to define what that is? So swatting is something that shitty people do to streamers. Anybody who is, you know, performing something live online, where they call that person's police department and say, hey, there is, you know, a violent armed person at this address. Send the SWAT team to them in order to contain the situation. This has led to just a tremendous amount of injury. One person has died, at least that I know of, back in 2017 in Wichita, Kansas. Somebody died because the SWAT team came in and did their thing, and that person was a victim of this horrible online person who took things way too far. However, Wichita, Kansas, in the wake of this, has actually started doing something that I think is a good idea, or at least as a half measure, along the way. So if we can't get people to stop being dipshits online, and if we can't get police departments to demilitarize, at the very least, they can do it, which Wichita can do what they're doing, which is allow people who are streamers to basically register their address and say, hey, this is probably going to happen to me. So instead of sending the team right away, like put in this extra step, it's fine. So I think this is generally a good idea, and it's, it is probably, you know, for the moment, the best thing to do, which, you know, basically helps everybody. It helps people not die at the hands of police. you know, who are pointed at that person like a, you know, like a weapon by dipshits online. And it helps police officers not, you know, waste time and resources going on a bogus call. So.
Well, and then the article also says that the person who died wasn't even involved in streaming. The address that was given to them, to the cops, was the former address of somebody who was involved in some argument about a Call of Duty game and like some match or something. And the actual resident, the current resident of that address where somebody used to live that used to, you know, did play this game, that person died because the police, you know, were told that this was a homicide in a potential hostage situation, and they thought he was grabbing a weapon, reaching for a weapon or something. I don't know the situation, but that person had literally nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's an added layer of tragedy on top of this.
Yeah.
So, you know, it probably this probably wouldn't, you know, stop. This would not stop police departments, you know, from getting an outdated piece of information and going on that way. I don't know what you do to prevent that. But yeah, swatting happens all the time. This article, you know, refers to somebody who was swatted just 2 weeks ago.
It's a step in the right direction. I'm glad they did it.
It is a good idea. So on that bummer, how do you all feel about bundling it up?
I feel like we need to button, please.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 298. Once again, I mentioned it in the multiplayer section. I'm going to say again, no episode next week because of Labor Day here in the United States. However, we should be back the week after that. Otherwise, you know, if you have any ideas, like cool things that we can do for episode 300, let us know. It's fine if it's just a you know, another kind of standard episode. You know, if there is something you would like to see, I will take ideas. Same thing here for the folks on the call, if you have any ideas. Otherwise, though, you know, the usual stuff you can do. Ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts, Facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast, and Patreon.com/DuckFeedTV. So I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can follow me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between each word, and on Twitch at Deck of Wonders, all one word.
Cool.
Well, aren't you all confusing with those underscore two things?
I know. I switched it up. I thought about contacting the Twitter at Deck of Wonders, no underscores, hasn't tweeted since, like, I don't know, 2013 or something. I thought about trying to ask them about it. I figured there was no way that ended in anything positive. Like, my win scenario is they just don't respond.
Right.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm Jolichon in places. You can find me there, all of them.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Okay. Who has titles?
I do.
Okay.
Where are you getting this jelly?
Okay.
This one's very long, so it's not going to be one, but I still want to say it. You get your face thrown back in your face.
Okay.
Scatological.
Okay.
And then my response to that, which was everything is suffering, because that's a nice little oblique reference to abject suffering.
Yeah.
Same premise, but without direct.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I only have one fart devil to the joke door. let's see here. Dennis, what do you have?
I had one, this is also tooting my own horn, so apologies, but a translation error for She Thirsty.
Okay. All right. Ben, how about you?
I got two weird ones. I got Everything is Suffering. It matches the download of the episode. And then I also have Curious About Farts. Good luck, Cole.
Yeah. No. There. Yeah. It was a weird. And that's fine. Let's see here. I'm torn between Everything Is Suffering and Where Are You Getting This Jelly?
Of that conversation, I think Where Are You Getting This Jelly is a pretty good representation of it.
Yes.
I prefer the non-downer title.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say the Everything Is Suffering is also like, it references abject suffering, but it also references the fact that we had a lot of downers in the episode. Where are you getting this jelly?
Let's go with it. Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, done. I'm gonna go to bed.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go eat and then get ready to go run tomorrow because I'm gonna be doing that again.
All right.
I'm gonna try waiting 302 minutes at last report.
Jeez.
To get into this damn game, right as my friends all decide to stop playing, I am sure.
Ridiculous.
I might actually live tweet some Final Fantasy 12 before I go to sleep, just for those folks out there waiting for my next commentary.
Cool.
All right.
Good hanging out, guys.
Well, take care, everybody.
Bye. It's gonna be a long time since the next time I talk to you. So enjoy Duckfest and. Talk to you guys later. Have a good Labor Day and all that.
Yeah. Take care, everybody.
Yeah. Likewise. See you guys. All
right. Yep.
Night.